This topic, in fact, was on a program about 2 or 3 years ago, but then got shifted because we did a part two of something else, and I never quite got around to putting it back, and I was a bit terrified at the subject, although I had written it down, because it's so wide, very wide, issues relating to milk and meat, issues relating to ovens, to microwaves, to dishwashers, general kashrus, and not only kashrus, but also Shabbos and Yom Tov. I began to realize that this subject could take up maybe 15 or 20 shiurim, but I won't do that to you. We'll just pick on some little interesting ideas which are practical, and maybe after today, there may be others in a series, I don't yet know, but pick me up when you find fault with anything I'm saying. I wanted to concentrate more on some practical things, which might make it a bit more chatty, but there's nothing wrong with that. And you might have some suggestions yourself as to something which matches into this subject of kitchen misconceptions, that people sometimes get the wrong idea about certain things. Perhaps one of the most common aspects in this kind of subject is the subject of food labeling, and that is sometimes you get stickers and you begin to wonder when you see a sticker on a processed food whether it is really genuine. Certainly it costs money for a manufacturer to start making special wrappers for kosher items, and they might use the same wrappers for non-kosher items, but they've got the perfect rabbinical supervision, that would be fine. But I do have a practical experience where I was buying a certain chocolate for Pesach, and it had a sticker on it, and it said, with the hashkocha of Rav Yisrael Meir Levinger of Basel, Switzerland. Well, I've personally known this Rav because I got married in his town, and I thought, I'm going to check this one out. And my brother-in-law, Harry Goldstein, who for many years was the shul manager of Rav Levinger's shul, I sent him a copy of this chocolate wrapping and asked him, could you check this out? And it turned out from discussions with Rav Levinger that he had never given such a heksha. The firm apparently had asked him to consider giving them a heksha, but the discussions never proceeded and nothing ever happened, and he was in fact quite upset to hear that a sticker was being used with his name, written with Hebrew, right? Looks more authentic that way. That's all right. That was not an issue of kosher and treif, but it was an issue of kosher lePesach and kitnius, because lecithin is used in chocolates, and under the Trade Descriptions Act, it did not suit the necessary requirements. And so one has to be very suspect sometimes of processed food, labeled food, stickers on food, to the extent that we've even unfortunately had some very tragic experiences in this country, in America, where places with a heksha, places with suitable rabbinical supervision, have nevertheless fall foul of fraudulent activity. There was a case in Liverpool back in June 2019 of a kosher deli under rabbinical supervision, which was discovered, and Manchester basically struck them off the list. Apparently the owner committed suicide. A very sad story. In Canada, back in July 17, there was a case of a firm in Woodbridge, Canada, being fined $25,000 because they had provided fake kosher cheese, or so-called kosher cheese, to Orthodox Jewish summer camps. I had an old school friend who became a Rav in New York. His name was Avram Marmerstein, and he had been giving a heksha to certain outlets, And he just felt uneasy about the fact that although he had very reliable mashgichim, he nevertheless felt he must go on board himself and watch the place. So one weekday, he decided to watch the shop from afar at lunchtime when the mashgiach would normally go on his lunch break. And as he watched, he saw a van draw up outside, and underneath a big pile of kosher chickens, there were chickens which were unwrapped, and it turned out from his investigation that they were not kosher chickens at all, and they put their own wrapper on it labeled kosher. Very sad. One has to take precautions, and it's not only with meat. Sometimes with fish you can have problems. There is the custom that when you buy codfish, you should buy it with its skin attached. And that way you know from the skin, because it's got the scales on it, that it's a kosher codfish. Salmon we're less particular, because everyone can tell salmon is salmon. But with fish fillets, or certainly minced fish, it's best to buy from a heshed kosher outlet. So that's one idea of kosher misconceptions. And you've got sometimes lots of secret ingredients where, by law, a firm is not obliged to reveal what all their ingredients are. Or they might simply write colourings, flavourings, seasonings, and you don't know what they are. And there are a number of particular items which might be listed in ingredients, and you don't really know where they come from. There is a certain insect called the cochineal, I think it's called, or the carmine, which gives a red dye colouring for foods. Pardon?
Cochineal is the name of the colour. It comes from the red spider.
From a red spider? Oh, thank you. I thought it was an insect. There's something called collagen, or which makes gelatine. It's from the bones of beef or from pork. And sometimes you see the words kosher gelatine. When you see such words, it requires a heksher. There's the glycerol or deglyceride, which is put into ice creams, margarine, peanut butter. All these have to come with rabbinical heksher supervision. Artificial colouring is a very vague terminology. Then you've got glycerine, glycerol, which maintains a moisture content. It prevents drying out of food. And very often, this may be made from animal sources, even though it doesn't say so. So even if it's labeled vegetarian, that's not good enough. Sometimes you'll get a product which says vegan, and that's not good enough when they've got these kinds of ingredients. There could be a problem in hydrogenated vegetable oil. Well, we won't talk about the health risks of those. That's for another dimension. But in terms of food heksherim, if you see hydrogenated vegetable oil, it's used in baking, it's used in frying, it's used in cooking, it needs a heksher. Then there's monosodium glutamate, which is a dreaded ingredient for many health conscious people. MSG, as it's called in brief, is used in soups, it's used in sauces, it's used as a flavor enhancer in various processed foods. It should not be used unless it has a heksher. I note that certain local kosher made soups have it in, but they've got the heksher, fine, but some people get a lot of allergic reactions to it. Then there's something called stearic acid, which is a lubricant. It's used a lot in chewing gum base. Needs a heksher. What about the word vegetable oil? You know, if you see a word vegetable oil, by law, it doesn't have to be 100% vegetable oil. It could have fish oil or something like that. If an oil is 90% vegetable oil, then legally, according to the law of the land, it doesn't need to show any other ingredients. So you need to know, what is this oil exactly? Then another trap is whey, W-H-E-Y, which is derived from cheese production. We did discuss it briefly when we spoke about cheeses. It's found in baked goods, in ice creams, in confectionery. It can be a major problem. And even though some people might rely on certain heterim regarding Cholov Yisrael and Unshomed milk, whey powder can be completely 100% trace. So it's a good idea to know about halacha and about food science. Now, we do rely a lot on Hechsherim, certainly, but there is an interesting story told about the Brisker Rav, who once arranged to be supplied with chickens from a farmer, a Jewish farmer from a moshav. He wanted it, in fact, for kaporos, but the farmer thought he was going to add in a nice free gift and include some homemade cheese. And he came along to the Brisker Rav, and he presented him with this beautiful homemade cheese, and the Rav asked him, does this cheese have a heksher? And a bit red-faced, he said, well, I have to confess to you, no. He said, look, I'm a Shomer Shabbos, I do supply people in my family and friends with this cheese, but I do not sell it commercially. So the Rav hesitated, and this farmer felt like he was sinking in the ground, but the Rav said to him, are you sure you don't sell it commercially? He said, yes. So he said, well, you know, food is supposed to have a heksher. He felt embarrassed. But after he explained to him that it was not sold commercially and it was only supplied to his friends, and he was a fearer of heaven, Yiras Shemayim, so the Brisker Rav said to him something which shocked him. He said to him, well, I'll tell you the truth. He said, if food has a heksher, I do not eat it. And he accepted the cheese and he ate it. Why? Because the guy was the Yiras Shemayim. I understand that some of this new bedside kosher hospital meals don't come with a heksher, but they are reliable Yiras Shemayim. And
they have the KLBD.
Well, they got the KLBD, right. Okay, when they started,
they don't display the heksher. Because I asked them,
Pitassi
didn't answer me at all.
When they started a year and a half ago, they were supplying my wife, who was in hospital with pneumonia, and it was very refreshing, nice food.
Must have been on the market. I asked Mr. Lister what he thinks.
They admitted it did not have a heksher, but that it was a Heimish set-up from families, and okay, there's a thing called Eidech Odnem on the Isurin. So if somebody is a Shomer Shabbos, if somebody knows their basics about the rules of kashrus and they say it's kosher, then it's kosher. My Rosh Yeshiva of Meir Schlesinger, he told me that the way he knew whether he was eating in a kosher house was not by looking at the Hechsherim. He would ask questions to the Baal HaSabayis of the house and say to her, do I know that everything here is reliable? And if she would say to him, well, I got the chicken from such and such a shop, and I got the meat from such a shop, and I got the vegetables from so and so, and she starts explaining things, then he knew it was a kosher house. But if she said to him, what do you take me for? You think I'm not kosher? Then he was suspect. If somebody was defiant and was not willing to give the details of where they got various things, then he thought maybe that's not a suitable place to eat it. Something which is often overlooked, especially in very Haimish Haredi circles, is not so much the Hechsherim, but is the hygiene. And you might think it's not necessary to talk about such things when we have a halacha shiur, but the truth is that sakanta chamira me'esura, and that we are worried about harmful hygiene. We are worried about the Torah says, look after yourself. And although we say Shomer Pasoim Hashem, Hashem preserves the simple, and certain risks which people generally take on themselves are okay, we also say, don't rely on any miracles. And there are certain, in fact, in the Gemara, there are certain health matters which we don't understand scientifically, but we have a tradition handed down to us, for example, that you don't mix meat with fish. This is in Yerodeo, Siman Kuf Tesvov. You can certainly, according to most opinions, cook with kalim, like you can cook fish in a meat dish and so on, but the actual mixing of the foods, we're particular not to mix. There is another idea, and that's if garlic or onions or eggs are peeled and have been left overnight, then one does not eat them the following day. Certainly, if these matters are mixed in a salad or have been salted and treated in some way, then we're not particular. So if something's left in a fridge, then you might assume it's been covered. So if you've got shelled eggs in a fridge, that's not the same thing as leaving it out overnight. Rav Moshe Feinstein says that since these matters are not actually written in the Shulchan Aruch, so we can be lenient if they are from a factory or from an industrial setting. I do know that one shop was even selling roast eggs for Seder night with a heksha. Well,
and salt water.
With salt water.
And salt water, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, if people need heksherim for these things, yeah, fine.
So can I make a remark about heksherim? That very often the heksher is given by an individual rather than an kashrus organization. And when it comes to kashrus and heksherim, you have to be particularly careful. The Rav said to me that the Herzl dairies, who do yogurt, used to be under Kadassia Heksher and switched to Rabbi Schneebald in Edgware. He will not cast any aspersions on Rabbi Schneebald, but he said to me in general, if somebody is giving a Heksher as a Parnassa, one has to be quite wary of what's going on.
Thank you. That's very interesting. I'm sure Rav Schneebald is a Yirat Shemaim, and I think Rav Osher Westheim was giving personal Heksher in Manchester.
It's a principle, not as I say, not casting aspersions on anybody in particular.
Interesting.
Yeah, and also does that count also if it's only part panosa? Because if we stay with the example now, without no aspersion, but the example of Rav Schneebald, I don't know whether that's his main panosa, I suppose he's paid the salary as well as Rav of
I note that for a while in Shefa Mahadrin they were giving Hesherim of Rav Knopfler and Rav Schneebald or something like that. I don't know, I can't comment. The Gemara is very worried about drinks which are left uncovered. There the Gemara is talking about a snake might have come and put some venom into it from its tongue, so that if any drink is uncovered, then you should not have it to drink. Nowadays, we say, well, snakes are not so common, do you have to worry? But although there is a tendency to be lenient, it's still advisable to be strict, because you don't know what other things might have entered into that drink. The Sefer Shmiras HaGuf HaNefesh says, if you've left a drink uncovered for 3 seconds, then you should not drink it. I once had an experience as a teenager when a friend of mine opened up a Coca-Cola can, he drank from it, then we went out for about half an hour, then we came back, he drank from it again, and then he passed it to me, offered it to me, and we were not worried about hygiene, were we? And I drank from it, and there was a wasp on my tongue, which stung me. Well, fortunately, I survived the ordeal, but that was a modern-day example, you could say, of leaving something uncovered, a typical Coca-Cola can, where he had even drunk from it after coming back, and the wasp was inside it, and he drank from it, and he was not affected. But then when I drank from it, I had that muzzle, and I was stung on my tongue. It was very painful. There are some people who are mukbid on mixing fish not just with meat, but also with cheese. Chabad Hasidim are particular about it, although they say if you add butter to the fish, then it's okay. This is brought actually in the Yerodeo, in the Shulchan Aruch, Simon Pei Zayin. And in practice, I mean, you might have a pizza with some anchovy fish on it. Is that okay? Well, most people are not particular. And according to the Shach and the Taz, this rule in the Shulchan Aruch was a printer's mistake. And they say he meant to write meat with fish and not cheese with fish. But nevertheless, many Sephardim are particular about this custom, and as I said, Shulchan Aruch Harav, the Pachad Yitzchok, who apparently was a doctor, he said it only applies to actual milk and not cheese being mixed with fish, and not cheese or butter, but he was Machmir himself. There is also a lot written about in the Sefer Shmiras HaGuf HaNefesh about leaving food or drink under a bed in which one was sleeping. This is perhaps more mystical stuff, but it's busy even okay if it was done unintentionally. But on a practical note, when we're talking about hygiene, and we're talking about we have to look after our health, I did a little survey on the Food Standards Agency website on kosher establishments, because every food outlet gets a rating between 0 and 5. 0 is really bad. You know, if you have 1, it means urgent improvement required. 5 is regarded as excellent. And there is a guy called Ben Krohn who collated 148 kosher businesses just in the borough of Barnet, and he compared them to the council averages to all the food outlets in the borough, and he found that the kosher establishments were 2.5 times more likely to have concerns regarding hygiene. So I'm not going to name exact establishments. You can do this research yourself. But there is a certain kosher bakery in this area which is given a number 5 excellence rating. But when I was in there, the lady was serving me with her bare hands handling rolls, and she was using the same bare hands to handle the money at the till, which is not hygienic. I remarked to her about it, and she just shrugged, and she said, speak to the manager.
I was going to suggest that on a scale of 0 to 5, many kosher establishments are probably minus 3.
Well,
sorry to be, I shouldn't say that.
Well, I did do a survey of a number of kosher establishments. In Hendon, there is one large establishment which makes its own food in the form of a deli, which has a rating of 3, which means generally, 3 means generally satisfactory. You can make out from that what you want. There is also a certain bakery in Hendon with what you might call a very good hechsher, which also has a rating of 3. 1 or 2 have 4. I was looking, interestingly, to see which of the establishments were Kadassia, which were London-based in or Federation. But I don't want to be done for slander or libel if I give any names. But certainly, there is a Kadassia establishment in Edgware, which has a number 5, which is excellent. So
Edgware?
In Edgware. But
can't be Grodz, they're not Kadassia anymore.
It was Grodz. I thought they were Kadassia.
No, they've changed the head.
Well, Grodz in Edgware have a 5, and there are some other establishments locally which have 5, but I don't think they're Kadassia. There is a certain Kadassia butcher who has a rating of 2. Which means improvement is necessary. But I'm not going to say publicly now what the names are, but you can research this yourself. Not only the restaurants, but any food establishment which sells delicatessen or something like that. Interestingly enough, there are 2 Kadassia establishments which I entered into FSA, and it says not found. One of them is a Kadassia butcher, and the other one is a Kadassia outlet which makes delicatessen, and I couldn't even find them on the FSA website, so you should draw from that your own conclusions. Well, let's go on to some other various misconceptions. Some people think that any dairy food which comes from Israel is okay in terms of Cholav Yisrael, and that's not quite the case. The chief rabbiner in Israel does allow non-Cholav Yisrael powdered milk to be used as an ingredient. This is based on a heter which was given by Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, Sefer Tzadik Livracha, who said that the whole prohibition relating to milk was really relating to fluid milk and not powdered milk, and he gave a heifer for it. But it is correct to be strict to have even powdered milk, which is under supervision. What about the subject of frozen fruits and frozen vegetables, which have a hechsher on them? So they claim that they are pre-checked. Certainly, it's very handy when you're preparing lots of lettuce for Seder night to have something which is pre-checked with a hechsher, but that cannot give you an outright guarantee that it is insect-free. It's still a good idea to check over. I'm suspect myself personally about the amount of insecticide they use on these items, because when they produce lettuce or broccoli with a hechsher insect-free, I made inquiries through somebody who I know extremely well. He said, yes, he asked one of these farmers about it, and he said they put lots and lots of insecticide on them just to make sure, as much as the law allows, and then he said, plus a bit more. So they'll put as much insecticide on them as they can in order to guarantee them insect-free, but I don't know what effect that will have on your health when you are swallowing so much insecticide. We are approaching soon Shemitah year, and we will be getting wines which come from Eretz Yisrael, which will be saying on them, not only that they're kosher wine, not that they're under supervision, but they will also write on them, Otsa Bezdin. Otsa Bezdin wine after Shachabir, to show that they complied with all the rules of Shemitah. Well, that's not really good enough, because what is that wine doing outside Eretz Yisrael? Because if food has Kedushas Shavuos, it should not even be exported. It should stay within Eretz Yisrael. And then the question is, was it correctly declared hefker, ownerless, which is the rule of Shemitah? And even if it is okay to drink, and the Rabbonim are saying, yes, okay, it's Kedushas Shavuos, but just use it correctly, you can't use that wine for other purposes other than drinking. For example, to put out your Havdalah flame, or to spill the wine on Seder night with Dom Tzvadei HaKinim when you do the same place. When you're spilling that wine, if it's got Kedushas Shavuos, you're not allowed to do that.
Yeah, some years ago, I brought home a bottle of Otsar based in wine by mistake, brought home from Israel. I asked Rabbi Cohen what to do, and he said I have to make it Hefka. So I saw three friends out in the street,
yes,
made it Hefka. None of them wanted it, so I picked it up and brought it.
Yes, that is the remedy. Thanks. I was going to say that. Yeah, if you do have Otsa-based wine, you make it hefker in front of two people in a public place, and then you drink it. But you still can't use it to extinguish your Havdalah wine. There are lots of other issues, and we are going to get easily bogged down with intricate details if we're going to start discussing them now. I'm thinking of things like microwave ovens and can you kasher them, and or even ordinary ovens, and there's issues relating to dishwashers, and there are issues relating to Shabbos. Certainly, when it comes to Shabbos, there are issues relating to when you can use time switches, when you can't. These are all under this heading, but we're not going to be able to deal with them today. In general, we have an issue today. We're discussing some misconceptions, some health issues, but the Torah mandates us, "Vitkadashtem, v'yisem kadoshim, you shall be holy," and just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu is holy, so we should emulate him, and therefore we should not be looking for compromises. And b'derech she'odom modeid modedim lo, if the way you judge other people, Hashem will judge us. So if we're looking for od heterim and compromises, we don't want Hashem to be with us in that sort of way of looking for a way out, or applying midas hadin rather than midas harachamim. So we have to go beyond what is maybe necessary to ensure that we follow kashrus unwaveringly, without compromises, not only protecting our spiritual standards, but also our physical health. I'll leave it there if there are any questions. But I think we will have further kitchen misconceptions in the future. Part two, maybe part three. I'll have to see. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Eli. Can I just make one point about fish and meat?
Yeah.
We very often have the same meal, fish and meat, not in the same course, where we have fish separately and it's served on one plate. You then have to have a drink in between and then you can have the meat course. I think that's quite common and I don't think that's a problem. Do you agree?
Yeah, definitely. The custom is to have a drink or something between the courses.
As long as you don't have it on the same plate, I think that's what you were getting at.
Yeah, not on the same plate. And after fish, you have a drink. What's an interesting halacha is if you have meat first and then fish, so you might have an hors d'oeuvre, say, of chopped liver, and then you might have a further course which serves fish. The halacha is not only should you have a drink in between, but you should wash your hands as well in between.
Right, okay.
If the meat comes before the fish.
You ran out of topics.
I've run out, well, the program for 6 months has ended, but I haven't run out of topics.
So can you provide a list of further 6 months or something?
I shall be honoured, thank you.
Thank you. Anyway, has anybody got anything to say? Otherwise, I'm just going to thank Eli very much for giving this.
Gershon wants to say something.
Thank you. After fish, before meat, you mentioned drinking only, but are you not meant to eat as well? Kinoach and hadacha. Kinoach is eating something, and then hadacha, and then washing the mouth out with the drink. But a fish hors d'oeuvre will always have some challah followed by a drink,
right,
and then the
okay, so you'll chew a piece of challah, that will fulfill that as well. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gershon.
I think it's a requirement not just to drink, but to eat as well, and the eating should be done before the drinking, as far as I know.
And the eating should be done before the drinking. Thank you.
Deli, just to let you know, I talk to a kosher establishment in Golders Green quite a lot, and they said in recent months, especially in COVID, Barnett's Health, they're patrolling the streets almost on a daily basis, going into food establishments to check hygiene. This is something that it's not just COVID related, but because of COVID, they have upped their game on that front.
I have seen them wearing labels on their T-shirts, COVID monitoring officer. But does that mean they were doing kashrus monitoring as well?
Yeah. That I'm sure not.
Well,
okay, but I want to thank Eli again. Eli for giving us yet another share. It's been we've been going for quite a long time, and I'm pleased that people are keen to listen and that we've got a good share going with quite a lot of participants. We may continue for a long time further if Eli's agreeable, and we thank you very much for giving the share.
Thank you very much. I have a lovely audience.
Thank you. Thank you.